All right. I need three people, but let me tell you who I need here. I need three people who believe they are good salesmen. You can sell stuff pretty good. Okay, you guys think you can do it? Sean? Okay. Let's see here. Francesca, you think you can do it? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Come on up here. And let's see over here. You want to do it? Fro man, check you out. Okay, come on up here. You guys come up on the stage. Okay, you guys need to put these blindfolds on. This is the twist, all right? You guys are going to be wearing blindfolds. There you go. Put your blindfold on so you can't see. Like a ninja, all right? So put your blindfolds on. Now, what you guys are going to be doing is selling some objects, but the trick is you're not going to have any idea what these objects are. Okay? Now, you as the audience, you guys are the people that they are trying to sell these things to. And your job is going to be to ask them questions about these objects, but not questions that are going to give whatever the object is away. Okay? Like if it's a DVD, don't be like, how much do DVDs cost? Okay? That doesn't work. Okay? But you'll be able to ask them questions and they're going to try to describe these things to you. Okay? Would you like to go first? No? Okay, here. Step back a little bit. Okay, you're going first. Ready? Okay, so tell us your name.
Andrew.
Okay, Andrew. And let me show you, audience, this is what Andrew wants to sell you today. All right? This is a fine object, and it is a very valuable object. I believe Andrew would agree with that. So, Andrew, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your product?
It's very durable, I guess.
Good. Durable. Good. What else? Why would we want to buy it?
Because it's fun to use.
Good. It's fun to use. That's great. Okay, do you guys have any questions about Andrew's product today? Yeah. How much does it cost?
$500.
$500. For one, or is that like a pack?
For one.
For one. So $500 for this, and that seems like a pretty good value, am I right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a great value. Okay, good. What's it used for? What do you do with it?
I have no idea.
Oh, well, you're the salesman, so why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
For anything, pretty much.
For anything? Wow, $500, you can use it for anything.
Could it hurt someone under 3 years old?
Oh, is it safe for little kids to play with?
No.
No, okay, it could injure them. Do you have one of these at home?
Yes, I do.
Wow, how many of them? Just one or?
Just one.
Just one. That's all he needs. How much? So if you wanted to buy a few of them, are they all just $500 each?
Well, actually, if you buy three, it's $1,250.
Wow, so he'll cut you a deal. Wow, that's a killer discount.
What's it made out of?
Plastic.
Plastic, great. And last question. Can you put it in the dishwasher if it gets dirty or something?
No.
No, you don't want to do that. That could be dangerous. Good question, though. Okay, give a hand to our first salesman. You can step back right there. Okay, second saleswoman, not man. Okay, salesperson. Tell us your name.
My name's Sarah.
Okay, Sarah. And this is a product that Sarah wants to sell you today. Okay, this is a great product. One thing that I believe Sarah is going to tell you everybody should own, okay? So, Sarah, tell us a little bit about your product.
I think it's pretty much the coolest thing on Earth.
That's awesome. It really is. I mean, check it out, right? Let's be honest. It's pretty much the coolest thing on Earth. So, does anybody have any questions about her product today? How much do these go for?
$2.50.
$2.50?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yes.
How many can you own?
Think about 2,000.
2,000 of these you can own. That's good to know. I would have thought it was much less, but yeah. Do you own one of these?
Oh, yeah.
How many do you own?
24.
Wow. She was so quick about that. Yeah. Do they come in different colors?
Yeah.
Yes, they do. What colors?
Green, purple, and magenta.
Ooh. Green, purple, and magenta. That's great. Yeah. What's it made out of?
Rubber and and purple stuff.
Good. Rubber and purple stuff. That's good to know. Okay. I have a question. Does it come in any kind of flavors or anything?
Strawberry, banana, and kiwi.
Strawberry, banana, and kiwi.
And pineapple.
Pineapple. Tropical flavors right here, ladies and gentlemen. Give a hand for Sarah, our second salesperson. Okay, don't go too... stop right there. There you go. Okay. Sean. Oh, no. What are you doing? Okay. Step forward. Stop right there. Okay. This is Sean, our third salesman. Here's his product that he wants to sell you guys today. Okay? This is a fantastic product. I believe Sean would definitely agree with that. And so, Sean, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your product?
It's very useful.
Good.
And...
It is, isn't it?
I use it, like, every day.
Good. How many times a day do you use it?
50.
50 times a day, ladies and gentlemen. Wow, that's great. Good to know. So it's pretty useful. Uh-huh. And how many of these do you own?
80.
80 of them. And he uses them 50 times a day. Good to know. Yeah. What's your question? Do you ever eat these?
For dinner and lunch and breakfast.
Wow. All three meals. And you own 80 of them, and you use them 50 times a day. Okay. Oh, and a fourth meal.
Yeah.
A midnight snack. Okay, yeah.
Do you clean anything
with these?
Yeah, all the time.
All the time. Okay, so after you clean them, can you still clean with it? Can you still eat it?
That's when they're the best.
Oh! Good to know. Wow, that's great. Yeah. What? How do you use it?
You put them in your mouth. There.
Oh, there. Yeah. There you go. Okay.
Do they have any fun purposes other than just cleaning?
Oh, good. So, can you use them for anything else besides cleaning?
Oh yeah, that's my entertainment all day.
Good. Okay. Last question. Can you put this in the dishwasher if it gets dirty? No, you want to keep it out?
It's durable.
Oh, it is very durable.
It's like invincible. Okay. It cleans itself.
Ooh, it cleans itself. That's great. Okay, give a hand to our third salesman. Okay, Andrew, any idea what you were selling?
No idea.
No idea. Sarah?
Nope.
Sean?
A chicken.
No. Okay, you guys can take your blindfolds off. Andrew, you were selling a fork.
Okay.
Sarah, you were selling a toilet bowl brush.
Yeah.
And that's why we thought it was great that they come in so many flavors. That's awesome. Sean, this is what you were selling, my friend. Take your blindfold off, you ninja. So you said it tastes better after you use it to clean stuff. Sean, oh man. Give a hand to our salespeople. You guys can grab a seat. Good job, guys. Thank you. That was some of the most, disgusting descriptions I've heard in a long time. I'm so glad those don't really come in strawberry and tropical flavors. Pineapple. Okay, turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter 38, because unfortunately what we're going to see today is that Satan is a super salesman. We're going to find that out today. We're going to talk about how he packages and sells his product of sin very well. Probably a little more convincing than our salespeople up here, believe it or not. Now, one thing you guys are going to notice today and next week is a contrast, a big contrast between Genesis 38 and Genesis 39. As we study today, you guys are going to see a bunch of people who give in to sin and lust, and they follow it through, and they reap the harsh consequences of it. Genesis 39, however, gets a lot better. We resume the life of Joseph, and we learn about how to flee temptation, standing up for what's right. So it's a big contrast. Now, you guys may remember Genesis 34. And it was all the way back a few chapters. We learned that one of Jacob's only daughters named Dinah, they were living near a city called Shechem. The prince of the city, Shechem, raped his daughter, Dinah. And then you guys remember that some of her older brothers, Simeon and Levi, got so angry about it, they went into the city, they murdered all the men in the city, they took the women and the children as hostages, and they stole all their stuff, left the city in ruins. And up to that point, we discussed that Genesis 34 was one of the darkest, most sinful chapters Many people believe in the whole Bible. But today, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to our new champion. Genesis chapter 38, okay? Genesis chapter 38 weighs in at a mere 30 verses, and yet it deals with such topics as lust, anger, deception, even prostitution. And we're going to read about some crazy, sinful, wicked people and the decisions that they made. And I do need to warn you before we go into Genesis 38. I will be honest, I believe Genesis 38 goes into pretty much R-rated detail. Now, we are not going to go into R-rated detail, but the Bible does. And some of you guys may be shocked to hear that. But the truth is that the Bible does not ever water down the truth. It says it exactly how it happened. It doesn't try to cover up for the godly people who made mistakes. It says it exactly how it went. And we've talked a little before about how Satan is really good at packaging his product of sin. He's really good at it. In fact, many of you guys have been sold things before. And many of you guys remember little slogans that companies use. You know, like, what's this company? It gives you wings. Red Bull, good job. Okay, how about the Fresh Maker? What is it? Not Fruit of the Loom. Mentos, the Fresh Maker, right? How about Lego My Ego? Good job. Okay, how about I'm Loving It? McDonald's, good job. You remember the song even. Okay, so today we're going to see two of Satan's sales slogans. Two things that I believe he would want us to really follow after and believe. And then we're going to take those things and we're going to look at the truth behind them. We're going to uncover the lies. So here's the first one, if you want to write this down. First thing that I believe Satan would want you to believe, and that is with sin, you'll win. With sin, you'll win. I Googled the word slogan just to see what came up. Came up with a website called sloganizer.net. And they advertise that if you or your company or your product needs a slogan, you type it in, and with the click of a button, it will produce a slogan for whatever it is that you need a slogan for. So I was like, oh, well, that's pretty sweet. Come to think of it, I think Velocity needs a slogan. So I put in Velocity. It came up with, heal the world with Velocity. There you go. There's our new slogan, okay? And then I was sitting there, and as I was studying, I had a little cup of eggnog, and I looked at the eggnog, and I thought, I think eggnog needs a slogan. So I put in eggnog, came up with this. I want eggnog and I want it now. That's what it came up with. And I would agree. And then I thought, well, I need a slogan. I don't have a slogan. So I put in my name, Kevin, empowering people. That's what I do, I guess. And then I thought, well, Courtney needs a slogan. I mean, I don't know if he has one. I'm pretty sure he doesn't. So I put in Courtney's name and it says, when you say Courtney, you've said it all. And then at that point, I got really confused because I was like, well, does that mean I should not study the Bible anymore? And I should just get up there and say, hey, guys, Courtney. And you guys will be all, oh, that was great. Fantastic. He's such a great teacher. No, I'm pretty sure that wouldn't happen. So I did continue to study after that. And it seems as though some people, in fact, most of the people in this chapter that we're about to read, fell for Satan's slogan, with sin you'll win. And isn't that how we are as humans? Even sometimes when the slogan isn't really true, it sticks in our minds, you know? Like, I've drank a lot of Red Bull. I've never sprouted wings. That's never happened. It would kind of creep me out if that did happen, you know? And even slogans that aren't necessarily true, like, I'm loving it. McDonald's, it sticks in our heads, right? I guarantee I have never loved it, okay? And my body has certainly never loved it. But it sticks in our minds, right? And even if it may not be true, we can remember it. And I think this is one thing Satan would love us to remember. But look at verse 1 in Genesis 38. And it came to pass at that time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he married her and went into her. And she conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Ur. She conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. And she conceived yet again and bore a son, and called his name, here it is, Shelah. That's a boy. Bummer. He was at Chezib when she bore him. Then Judah took a wife for his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. Not Kmart, Tamar. Okay? Now let me tell you two truths behind this lie that Satan would love for you to believe. The first truth is that it acts fast. Sin acts quickly. Verse 1, we read that Judah left his brothers behind, left his family, moved to a different city about 8 miles away called Adullam. And he moves there and kind of just starts his own life there. Verse 2, we read that almost immediately he marries a wicked, evil Canaanite woman, okay, the daughter of a man named Shua. And then verses 3 through 5, we read about his three sons. Almost immediately after their marriage, it seems like, they begin having kids. Three sons, Onan, and yes, Shelah. Three boys, okay? And verse 6, at a very young age, Judah, basically, it sounds as though he forces his first son, to marry a girl named Tamar. Okay, now do you see what's going on here? He's making very quick, hasty decisions without taking time to consult God, without taking time for prayer. We don't read anything about that. You guys may remember back to Genesis chapter 24. We read about the time that Isaac and Rebekah met and eventually were married. And you may remember Abraham figured out that it was time for Isaac to get married. So he sent out his most trusted, oldest, wisest servant to go find a woman for his son to marry. And you may remember as he journeyed, he prayed that God would bless this journey, that God would provide the right woman for his master, for Isaac. And God did. God blessed it. They put God first and God blessed that. Well, not the case with Judah. He doesn't do that. Sin acts fast. Now, fast acting can be good. I mean, when was the last time you saw an infomercial and they were telling you about how slow their product is? Never, right? They're like, yeah, these pills work great. Only thing is, it takes like a week to kick in after you take them, you know? You wouldn't buy that product at all. Every product we are trying to be sold is extra strength, fast acting, 100% guaranteed, right? I mean, think about it. If you're skating and you fall down, you break your wrist, you're going to want to act fast, right? Not keep skating with a, you know, wrist like a Z, you know? I mean, that's not going to work. Dude, your wrist is shattered. I mean, it looks like a Z. You're like, I know, pretty cool, huh? Z. Reminds me of zoo and zebra and stuff, you know? No, you're going to want to act. You're going to want to get to the hospital and take care of that. And acting fast can be good. However, with sin, it's dangerous. Because sin always starts small, but it also moves very quickly. And you have to always be ready to fight it. It acts fast. Second important truth is that it always fails. Sin never follows through. Look at verse 7. But Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord. And here comes the crazy part. And the Lord killed him. Well, what? Look again at that verse. And the Lord killed him. It really says that. Wow. How wicked this guy must have been, huh? I mean, if God finally was like, whoa, that is one wicked guy. I'm done with that guy. And however he did it, I don't know. There's no details given to us besides he was wicked in the sight of the Lord and the Lord killed him. Now, I don't know exactly what that means. I don't know if that means just one morning he didn't wake up, if one day he had a heart attack, if he got cancer, or maybe he got attacked by a rabid raccoon, or got hit by an ice cream truck or something. I don't know. I don't know how this guy died, but we just read that he was so wicked that the Lord killed him. Well, in the Bible, they had this rule that if your brother died, the other brother, it was his job to continue his brother's family with his wife, with that brother's wife, the first brother's wife, okay? So, died. He was married to Tamar. Well, Onan is the second brother, and it's now his job to continue Ur's family through Ur's wife, Tamar. So he marries Tamar. That's the good move in verses 8 through 9. That's the good thing that he did. But then he also decides that he doesn't like the fact that his son that he has with Tamar isn't even going to be his son. It's going to be his brother's. So he makes sure that she doesn't get pregnant. That's the bad move. Look at verse 10. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord. Therefore, here it is again, he killed him also. Wow. Things are not going too good for this family. He gets married, that's nice. Has kids, that's nice. But so wicked, God kills him. Onan, so selfish, God kills him. Now, all that's left is Judah, one evil son, one evil wife, and an angry daughter-in-law. Bad news. And imagine getting all those people together for Thanksgiving. They'd be like throwing mashed potatoes at each other, you know? Probably not getting along very well. Well, sinning never leads to winning. Satan would love for you to believe the opposite, though. But here's the truth. Sinning leads to separation. It's not going to get you anywhere. It takes you nowhere. Here's the second thing I believe Satan would want you to believe. And that is that you can trust in lust. Let me define that word, lust. Basically, simple definition is desiring something that's forbidden. Something that you know, someone that you know, that you shouldn't be pursuing or that you shouldn't have, but you're desiring it anyways. In fact, sometimes you're sinning just to get that thing or that person. And as a Christian, that word lust just kind of has a bad ring to it. You know, kind of like Barney. Ooh, you know? I mean, it kind of gives you shivers, right? And it's just not good. Well, with lust, as a Christian, we do our best to stay away from it, to live a life of purity, to steer clear, but not so with the rest of the world. In fact, perfect example, I was at the mall about a week ago, and I went into Anchor Blue, and I was looking through some of the t-shirts on the sale rack. I was disgusted at one of the t-shirts that I saw. I had to take a picture. It says this, "Hustler, in lust we trust." And I thought, oh man, what a terrible reflection of the world we live in. That we would make and sell t-shirts that say, "In lust we trust." And if that wasn't bad enough, you know where that saying originally came from. Originally it was, "In God we trust." And they took out the God and they put in lust and begin trusting in lust. But isn't that a reflection of the world we live in? That we trust in lust. And so many people do. Well, Judah, obviously, is probably a little hesitant with Tamar marrying his third son. The other two died. It didn't work out too well. So he's probably a little hesitant. Look what he does, verse 11. Then Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, "Remain a widow in your father's house till my son Shelah is grown. For he said, lest he also die like his brothers." And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. So he says, "You know what, Tamar, you've been living long enough with us. Why don't you go back home? Shelah's still young. And when he grows up, then you can marry him." But I wonder if Judah in the back of his mind is thinking, "I'll get her out of my house and hopefully she'll just meet somebody else and forget about the whole thing." Because he says, "My other two sons died after they married her. It can't be good. You know, I don't know if I want to give my third son to her." Well, Judah's problems are really just beginning. Look at verse 12. "Now in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died." Now his wife died. "And Judah was comforted and went up to his sheep shearers at Timnah, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite." So let me give you two truths behind this lie that you can trust in lust. You can't trust lust. Because lust, first of all, attacks fiercely. Now, I've heard of some pretty fierce attacks before. In fact, I remember one time I had a dog. His name was Brutus. That's right. Don't mess with Brutus. He was like 10 pounds of a dog, like this big. This dog was a wimp. He couldn't even, I think he was scared of mice, you know? Like, cats could beat him up. And so this dog, though, sometimes he'd try to act tough. And I was having a Bible study on Saturdays with a Jehovah's Witness. And so he came in. I invited this guy in. My dog went so ballistic. I have never seen my dog act the way that it did. And he started, I don't know if you guys have, your dogs do this, but he started running laps around the kitchen. But that wasn't it. He was peeing while he was running, okay? That's how crazy this dog was, barking like a maniac. I had to put him outside every time I asked the guy to come over. I read about one guy last Wednesday, lives in Montana. He was in a mall. Of course, there's Santa with the little girl on his lap. he decided while the girl was on Santa's lap that it would be funny to hit Santa in the face with a pie. So he did. And now he faces misdemeanor assault charges. So bad idea. Well, humans just do some messed up stuff sometimes, right? Just like Tamar, she's living proof. Look at what a terrible decision she makes. Verse 13, and it was told Tamar, saying, look, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. So the wheels begin turning in her head. Verse 14, she took off her widow's garments, covered herself with a veil, and wrapped herself. So in other words, she didn't dress the way that she normally dressed, and she started dressing like a prostitute. Okay, it says this, and sat in an open place, which was on the way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given to him as a wife. So here she is, she's like, you know what, Judah pushed me out of his house. I think he wants me to forget about marrying Shelah, but I really want to be a part of this family. God has a plan through this family. And she's probably thinking these things, she's like, man, nothing's going to work out, I need to do this. Now maybe she was doing her best to follow God. She wanted to be a part of God's family. But she hadn't quite learned trusting in faith. And she thought that she needed to do this to make it happen. She knew that somehow, to be a part of this family, she had to either sleep with Judah or Shelah. And they wouldn't automatically agree to this, so she had to be sneaky about it. And that's exactly what she did. She knew that she could trust in lust enough that Judah would fall for it. And her plan worked. Verse 15. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot because she had covered her face. So he looked at her. He said, oh man, that girl's beautiful. Thought she was a prostitute. Didn't know this was his daughter-in-law. Then he turned to her. By the way, that's his problem right there. He turned. Should have stayed focused, but instead he turned and said, please let me come into you. For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. So she said, what will you give me that you may come into me? And then he says, verse 17, and he said, I will send a young goat from the flock. Oh, what am I going to pay you? I'll give you a goat. Isn't that good? And so she said, will you give me a pledge till you send it? Then he said, what pledge shall I give you? So she said, your signet and your cord and your staff that is in your hand. Then he gave them to her and went into her, and she conceived by him. She got pregnant. So she arose and went away and laid aside her veil and put on the garments of her widowhood. So here's what happened. He's going up to go shear his sheep. His sheep are gone. They're with his sheep shearers up in a different city. He's walking. She comes out dressed like a prostitute. He sees her, says, man, that girl's beautiful. Doesn't know it's his daughter-in-law. Goes to talk to her, says, hey, let's work a deal here. She's like, sure, what are you going to pay me? A goat. I'll give you a goat. So she's like, okay, well, until I get that goat, what are you going to give me? And so he gives her what's called his signet, which is basically like for us, your signature, okay? Something that's very unique to you. And then a cord, which was a way that he held this signet, probably attached to his wrist or something, also very unique. And then it says he gave his staff, which probably also had his signature or his signet on there as well. All three of these things were very uniquely identifying him. Okay, so he gives them to her until he's able to send payment. And now they get together, they sleep together. Tamar is now pregnant by her father-in-law. Isn't this twisted? And we read this and some of us are like, oh, that's so disgusting. I can't believe that. Such sinful, gross people. And I got to be honest, when I first read this chapter, I thought the very same thing. But you know what I got to thinking? I wonder what God would say about our lives. I wonder when God looks at our lives, what he thinks. Because we can be so quick to read this chapter and say, I can't believe this girl would do that. I can't believe that guy would do that. But I wonder how many times God looks at our lives and says, I can't believe somebody who calls himself a Christian would do that. I can't believe that person, that guy, that girl that went to Velocity would walk out the door and do that. That's not what my people do. God is just as disgusted with the sin in our lives as we are with the sin in these people's lives. Proverbs chapter 7 talks about lust, talks about a young man that's being lured away by lust. And it says this, so she seduced him with her pretty speech and enticed him with her flattery. He followed her at once like an ox going to the slaughter. He was like a stag caught in a trap, awaiting the arrow that would pierce its heart. He was like a bird flying into a snare, little knowing it would cost him his life. That's where lust leads. Now, some of you guys may think, you know, it seems like we talk about this issue of lust a lot in Velocity. Well, in Genesis, it comes up a lot. It's there a lot. And I think that's because all the way from the beginning, which is what the book of Genesis is, lust has been a problem for people. All the way back to Adam and Eve. It's a huge struggle. You guys get it fed to you every day in TV, magazines, movies, billboards even. You can't even open your eyes without seeing it somewhere. And I can't say this enough. Lust will lead to losing. Lust will destroy your life. You have to understand that. Wait on God's timing. It's always better than yours. Not only does lust attack fiercely, but also just like sin, which lust is, it always fails. Lust always fails. Judah trusted that his lust would fulfill him somehow. You know, I mean, let's be honest, this guy was probably lonely. Two of his sons had died. His wife was dead. This guy's just living with his son. He's probably lonely. He probably justified his actions because of his, you know, the things that are going on in his life, the circumstances around him. Some of us are even tempted to do that sometimes. Like, man, my life is so hard. My parents and even my friends, I just don't know who I can turn to. I deserve to have a little fun. I mean, come on. Yeah, maybe I'm not supposed to do that thing or whatever, but I can ask for forgiveness. My life's just been hard. I deserve a little fun. Sometimes we can justify our actions, just like probably what Judah did. But Judah's plan doesn't turn out the way that he thought. Look at verse 20. And Judah sent the young goat by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he did not find her. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where's the harlot who is openly by the roadside?" And they said, "There is no harlot in this place." So he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." Also, the men of the place said, "There was no harlot in this place." Then Judah said, "Let her take them for herself, lest we be shamed. For I sent this young goat, and you have not found her." So what he does is he sends one of his friends. He's probably pretty ashamed of his actions. He sends his friend with the payment. He comes with the goat, and the prostitute's gone. So he starts asking around, "Hey, do you guys know where this girl is at?" They said, "No, there's not usually a prostitute here. We don't know what you're talking about. We don't know who it is." So he goes back home. "Judah, I couldn't find her. She was gone. They said that there's nobody that hangs out there." So he says, "Fine, just let her take my signet, my cord, and my staff. No big deal. She probably can't use them that much anyways. That's my stuff. So whatever, she's gone. Oh well, I guess we just won't pay her." He thinks it's over. In his mind, it is. But it comes back to bite him. Because look at what happens in verse 24. "And it came to pass about 3 months after," so it's been months now since this happened, "that Judah was told, saying, 'Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has played the harlot.'" She's been a prostitute. "Furthermore, she is with child because of it, by harlotry. So Judah said," check out what he says, "'bring her out and let her be burned.'" This is the man that was with her. And yet when he finds out what a filthy life she has been living, he says, "Bring her out and put her to death. I can't believe what a filthy, sinful life this girl has lived." What a hypocrite. But he gets caught in his sin. Verse 25, "When she was brought out, she sent to her father-in-law saying, 'By the man to whom these belong, I am with child.' And she said, 'Please determine whose these are, the signet and cord and staff.'" You catch what's going on here? She says, "That's fine, put me to death. But do you want to know who got me pregnant? It's whoever the owner of this signet and this cord and this staff is." And he realizes, verse 26, you can read. He realizes he's wrong. He says, "She's been more righteous than me. I didn't fulfill my promise." Now, don't think that it was okay for Tamar to do that. That was the wrong thing for her to do. But he gets caught in his sin. I guess that's what he deserves, right? Sin comes to do that. When you sin, you're going to get caught. I read about a mafia boss in Italy who got arrested. Okay, this is a mafia boss that got arrested while watching a TV show about the arrest of a mafia boss. How crazy is that? I guess he got what he deserved, right? Well, the very things that Judah left with Tamar proves his sin. He got what he deserved. His plan betrayed him. You can't trust in lust. But one thing you can trust in is that lust will ruin your life. It's not going to lead you anywhere. And guys, I can tell you this. I can speak from experience. I've been there. I've thought that if I follow this, if I do that, if I'm with this person, that is going to fulfill that loneliness or that desire that I have in my life. It won't. You need to wait on God. Sin, lust, pride, everything about it is going to fail you and it's going to come back to get you. Now, as I was studying this chapter, I had to take a break. I studied it for like 4 hours straight and I finally just had to get up and quit focusing on it for a little while because it's just such a chapter full of dirty, bad news, you know? But I don't want to leave you guys with that. I want to leave you guys with some good news. Because as much bad news as there is still some good news. Because later on, you can read, if you'd like, Matthew chapter 1, verse 3. You'll find an interesting name in that verse. It's the lineage of Jesus Christ, talking all about his family. And the name you'll find in there is Tamar. She's this girl that we just learned about today that acted like a prostitute. And she's one of only four women listed in the family of Christ. Three of those women were very sexually immoral women. One was Bathsheba. One was Rahab, who's a prostitute. Bathsheba committed adultery. Rahab was a prostitute. Tamar acted like a prostitute. And yet these women, once they turned their lives completely to Jesus, ended up so blessed to be a part of the family line of Jesus. It goes to show that God can and will forgive anyone for anything. Let me give you Jesus' words. Mark 2:17, when Jesus heard it, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Satan is out there to lie to you, to deceive you. He doesn't care about you. You have to understand that. His plan, the world's plan, is out to destroy your life. He hates you. But God, Jesus, died to show you that he loves you. And you need to follow him. He's the only way to heaven. Let's pray. God, thank you so much that you love us and you proved it by dying for us. God, we know that Satan has nothing but evil for us. God, we've read all about sin and evil in this chapter. God, I just ask that you would help these students to be different. That you would help them to be like Joseph, that we'll learn about next week, that fled from temptation, that stood up for what was right. And unlike Judah, who gave in, unlike Tamar, who thought she had to take things into her own hands, God, help us to have faith. Help us to live our lives for you. I pray for anybody in here this morning, God, that doesn't have a relationship with you. Help them to understand how much they need you, that they can't live another day without you. Thank you for saving us. In your name we pray. Amen. If you guys